Well, good morning. Thank you for braving the treacherous roads. Actually, I don't know. When I came, it was still raining this morning, and then it switched over to snow here. So we'll have to see how much or how this develops. So glad that you're here with us this morning. We're going to start a new series today called Married People. And our motivation for this as a staff is pretty simple. We'd like to empower wives and husbands and enrich your lives together. And we believe great marriages don't just happen. They don't just happen. It takes intentional effort from one or both partners to make it that way. Gary Chapman, who's a well-known marriage counselor and an author, also a Christian, he says this, "It's an old lesson, but a lesson every generation needs to relearn. Marital happiness is not automatic." It's not automatic. I think all of us know that intuitively. But we get into the grind of daily life, and it just leaks. We just forget. And I had a friend this last week tell me a joke about going to work, and it's the donut maker's curse, right? You just got to get up every morning and make the donuts. Get up every morning and make the donuts. Get up every morning. Sometimes marriage can start to feel that way. You just got to get up and make the donuts. And we want to help you break out of that monotony. So over the next 3 weeks, let's up our game in three areas. The first is connecting or reconnecting with one another. Next week, we're going to talk about communication styles and how they're different between men and women, because I don't know if you've noticed, there actually is a difference. And third week, we're going to talk about dealing with conflict, because the question isn't if you're going to experience conflict, but when. And we're going to spend time in Scripture and use that as our foundation and a springboard into our daily lives. Now, two realizations here. I know that a three-week sermon series is not going to fix all of the potential issues in a group as big as this. So I just want to say, you know, we're talking about steps here. If you're in a place where you feel really stuck in your marriage, you need to talk to someone. Come and talk to me. Big believer in the power of counseling and people who've been trained and spent a lot of times with folks helping them work through issues. It can be really, really powerful. But there's such a huge need for this, not just in our valley, but just in our society in general. And so great marriages don't just happen. I realize in talking about married people, we're addressing only 50% of the adult population. And we're potentially leaving out half of you. The latest stats that I could find is the percentage of U.S. adults that are single is 42%, and it's trending upward. Like, that's been up 5% even in the last 10 years. And you may be single by choice. I know a number of people who are single, even never been married. Or you may be single by not choosing that. Maybe you've never been married. Maybe you've experienced a divorce. Maybe you've lost a spouse. So we never, ever want to imply that by not being married, you know, that you're somehow incomplete as a person without marriage. That we're not trying to communicate that at all. And while this topic may not immediately apply to you, much of the content applies to any important relationship in your life. And who knows? Who knows? A married stage of life could be in your future. So to get things underway, we're going to have a little bit of fun here. In the first service, I had some giveaways, and no pressure, but they really, really liked these truffle creams. I mean, doesn't that sound delicious, right? So somebody's going to win this. That's special. And then we also have a date night on us. And if you win the date night, you have to promise that you're going to use this to build your togetherness. So on that date, the usual suspects are out of the question. You know, the money, the kids, the whatever it is, the checklist that you might go through. This is about having fun together. So a simple show of hands here. If you know, actually we're gonna do the opposite of first service. We're gonna start at who's been married the longest. I'm really curious, and we'll work our way back. So I had to go way up there a lot. If you've been married more than 50 years, raise your hand. Okay, what about 40? Anybody? One? Two? Okay, how many? How many years?
42. 47.
Whoa. And Jerry, you were at the first one. 45, right. I know. He didn't win that time either. He got edged out twice. You and your lovely wife can enjoy
47.
Truffle creams.
Thank you.
Man, so exciting. Awesome. So, and then you have to teach next week too, because we all have a few things that we need to learn. But that's encouraging. I mean, that's 40 years. It's possible, okay? And there's actually quite a few people out there that have been married that long. Now let's work our way towards the search. So, if you're 30 years and under, raise your hand. That's a lot of people. 37. That's just amazing. Okay, now 20 years and under. Who's in that category? Quite a few. What about 10 years and under? 5 years and under. Who's left? How many years have you been married?
Four.
Three. Is there anybody else? Winner, winner, chicken dinner. 3 years. Here we go. Date. Round of applause.
Maybe I'll
congratulate you. That's fabulous. Congratulations to the both of you. So my wife, Corey, and I, we've been married 14 years, and I marvel at even saying that, not because I'm surprised that we made it this long. I actually should ask her, are you surprised we made it this long? No, she loves it when I publicly single her out. It really feels like just yesterday we're walking down the aisle, or in our case, walking down the beach. We were married in Oceanside, California, where Corey calls home. And you can defend yourself now at this service. You couldn't last time. I could take a shot at this. She left me at the altar, okay? The singer, which happened to be her sister, is like finished, and her dad and her are supposed to be right back there, and they're not there. And so you have this split little second like, okay, what's going on? And then the lifeguard truck lights, because they're like law enforcement on the beach in California. Lights coming up, and I'm thinking, her family's pretty spontaneous, but I'm fairly confident that they asked permission to actually have this gathering on the beach, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. And they get closer and closer, and it's Corey and her dad. They'd commandeered this lifeguard truck, and they're making this grand entrance. And so, I mean, we've overcome a lot in our marriage, okay? But in our relationship, we can look back, we can see definite phases, even in 14 years. There's the being newlyweds phase and all of the fun that was. And for us, we became parents, and there was this parent with young kids stage, and then there was parenting with kids in school age, and now we're kind of entering the midlife phase, and each one of those is distinctly different, at least it has been for us in our marriage relationship. And it always feels like you just get it like figured out. And then you kind of phase into this new reality that you have to figure out. So one size does not fit all in every marriage. Your relationship morphs. But the good news is it can morph for the better. It can morph for the better, absolutely. Because great marriages don't just happen. In the United States, marriages haven't fared well over the last 40 years, and who knows, maybe this is just a humankind problem that goes back to the beginning of time, but we've only been keeping track with statistics for, the last 100 years or so. But in the last 40, things have dramatically changed. In 1970, 70% of adults were married. Isn't that crazy? Only 30% were single, and that's gradually increased to where we're at now at over 40%. And the rate of divorce has also steadily increased to the point where we are now, and it's been pretty steady in the last 10 years, but our best guess is it's somewhere between 42 and 45% of all marriages end in divorce. So it's actually a really hard statistic to track and to figure out. So for our purposes, we're just gonna say around half of the people who get married either don't find or don't stay in marital bliss. Why? Well, John Gottman is one of the most well-known researchers on the topic of marriage. Especially, he studies what happens during conflict between two married people. And he's found that there's this behavioral patterns that shed light on why some marriages fail and others stay together. His research is pretty compelling. One of the things he's discovered is that 50%, so half of marriages that end, do so in the first 7 years. And if you're over 7 years in your marriage, I just want you to turn to your spouse and pat him on the back right now and say, we did it. We did it, okay? Good job. Good job. Now you're ready for what's next, okay? But maybe one reason that the average, or that there are so many, that statistic is so high is because Gottman found the average couple waits 6 years before asking for help. And I mean, that would never happen to us, would it? Never. We ask for help so well, often. No, it's another like human nature thing. This must just be us. We need to figure this out. And on average, couples wait 6 years before seeking help for marital problems. Gottman's also found another couple predictors of divorce. One of them he calls the four horsemen of the apocalypse. We'll put this up on the screen for you, okay? And couples, especially in the first like 5 years of marriage, that get stuck and gridlocked in these: criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. I mean, that is just toxic to your any one of those is toxic. But all four of them for marriage relationships, so hard to overcome. And here's where those of you who are over 7 years, you need to pay attention to this. He discovered there's another trouble spot in the 15 to 20 year window. A lot of divorces that happen in that framework. And it's from couples who fall into patterns of withdrawing emotionally when they're having conflict. You know, there's perpetual things that keep coming up. And you just, here we go again. And so couples withdraw from that. And during that withdrawal, there's a total absence of these really positive things, okay? These are good for your relationship, especially even in conflict, okay? That you have a shared sense of humor about things, that there's affection present and empathy with one another. And so over time, as you start to withdraw emotionally and these start to disappear, it gets really lonely, really snowy and cold in your marriage relationship with one another. And so that's why we're doing this in the first place. And this is just, this 3-week series is partly just a kickoff. This isn't the only time that we're going to do this. We've got date night coming up in December that we want to try and, we've got lots of students and high school kids around here that are great babysitters. We're going to join forces with youth ministry and children's ministry and provide a place for parents. You can drop them off here, and it helps our kids make it to their mission trip in the summer, and it hopefully gives you a night to connect with one another. And then we have two marriage retreats that are on the calendar for next spring, winter and spring. And if marriage retreat, what's that? It's something that you sign up for as a couple, and we're joining forces with a much bigger organization, Family Life USA and Family Life Canada, so there's going to be lots of people at these retreats. But it's just a weekend away, and there's content, there's speakers and sessions that help kind of go deeper and further equip you in your marriage relationship. And also just, it's a weekend away. So pay attention to that. There's information in your program if you're interested. We're going to definitely have more about that in the upcoming weeks. So, one thing Gottman discovered was that the quality of a couple's friendship, especially as it's maintained by the man in that relationship, it was so critical in the conflict, and also just in general. In fact, many researchers, many counselors have found that fostering friendship, the number one thing in successful long-term marriages, friendship. It's emotionally connecting with your spouse, and it isn't just good for your marriage, it's like breathing. Friendship and emotionally connecting with your spouse, I mean, it's life-giving to your marriage relationship. And at the end of this message, I want to provide some really practical ways for you to connect or reconnect with your spouse, ways to foster that friendship. And you know, it's never too late. It's never too late. Gary Chapman says your marriage can improve, and improvement can begin to get today regardless of your partner's attitude. So it starts with you. So before we get there, we need to explore and establish something really, really important. It's this. Why get married in the first place? I mean, why do people get married? Maybe it's love. I hope so. Could be companionship. Really, really important. Maybe sex. Really? Nobody's going to laugh at that one? I'm a middle schooler. I still really said sex during church. Whoa. Maybe it's to raise a family or to provide a home. There could be an element of social acceptance. Economic reasons are another reason. And also security, not just financially, but just in general. Those are reasons that a lot of people get married. But you can do all that without being married, can't you? You know, our society has decided on many of those a long, long time ago. So why bother? And I'm asking as a Christian, why bother getting married? Well, for followers of Christ, the reasons we may marry include love, companionship, sex, raising a family, sex. Did I say that one already? Security, sex. I won't go there. I'm going to get emails on that. I know I am. No, God designed marriage so that we could become one. One with our spouse. That's why marriage was designed by God in the first place. You see, after God created the first man, he placed them in this beautiful garden called Eden. And creation wasn't quite complete. He wasn't done. In fact, he says this to the first man in Genesis 2, verses 18. We'll put it up on the screen for you. The Lord God said, "It's not good for the man to be alone. I will make a helper suitable for him." It's not good. So what do you think God did next? He made a woman. No, that was a trick. I got you. He did not make a woman next. No, next, God formed wild animals, birds, and livestock out of the ground. Same thing that the first man, Adam, was made out of the ground, like a potter and a clay. That's what he did next. Interesting. Leads them all in front of Adam. Adam names them, but no suitable helper is found. What's God doing? He's making it obvious. Adam must realize for himself that it's not good to be alone. He needs a helper suitable for him. So over the years, much has been made over those two words, helper, suitable, or suitable helper. And some of the damage is done just in our English translation. And I had a professor who always said, the translator is a traitor, right? Just saying, whenever you go from one language into the other, so from Hebrew here into English, there's always something that gets lost. So helper, what does helper mean? Well, you look in Webster's, and it literally says, helper is an unskilled worker assisting someone who's skilled, right? That's what helper means to us. That is not what it means here. Do you realize that 16 of the 19 occurrences of the word for helper, ezer, 16 of the 19 refer to God in the Old Testament? And if you think that's to portray God as an unskilled worker assisting someone who is skilled, you got another thing coming. That's powerful. I couldn't believe that as I was studying this week. It's almost a helper in the sense of this is help that you can't live without. So there was no helper suitable for the man. Suitable means corresponding. It has this spatial quality to it. And much is made out of, you know, the rib that was used to make woman. You know, what's that mean? What's the significance? And people talk, I mean, this like goes all the way back to Augustine. They're talking about, you know, there wasn't anything out of their head or their feet. It was a rib. It's the side-by-side, together, behind kind of sort of deal. No, suitable actually has a spatial aspect to it. It's this, in front, face-to-face. It's like we're on equal footing here. There was no suitable, corresponding helper, someone that you couldn't live without in all of creation. God is making it obvious to the man that you need someone, and it gets him ready to receive the good and wonderful gift of woman. And it's not just any woman. God builds. Not forms out of the ground or what, but builds purposely, planned, puts together woman from man. And all of this happens while Adam is asleep. And when he wakes up, it's not just like the oh ho hum, you know, the animals come in front of him and he names them. No, God does something really, really special. He brings the woman to the man. And I want to pause here because this is significant. God built woman and then brings her to the man. And this is the first wedding. It occurs in the temple garden where God dwells that he created. And not only is God like the proud father, as we envision marriages happening, he's also like the bridal attendant. This is amazing. And much different to his reaction over the other animals, the man exclaims in verse 23 and 24, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, for she was taken out of man." That's actually what the man says. And then the narrator sums this all up and says, "That's why a man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh." So let me point out three words: leaving, uniting, and becoming one. I guess that's four words. Leaving, uniting, and one. Leaving. Notice who's named. It's the father and mother. And this is loudly proclaiming that the marriage bond takes priority over everyone else. Everyone else. Scholars believe that in the culture of that day, there was some kind of arrangement where the parents were actually ahead of the wife. So this is pretty profound. I mean, think about it. From the get-go, the Bible is saying, she's different. This marriage relationship is different. Your spouse is different. You already knew that, right? Your spouse is different. This is different. And your marriage relationship is ahead of everything else, ahead of your parents, your kids, your jobs, your hobby. And if it's not, what got in the way? That's the question for us. If it's not, what got in the way? So leaving and then uniting. Uniting can also be translated as cleaving, joining, clinging, sticking, holding to. I mean, what's this mean, right? Literal and also metaphorical in so many ways. And finally, becoming one. From the start, God intended marriage to be a union. It's meant to unify a man and a woman. And union is more than just sharing. It's the deepest possible connection between two people. It's an emotional intimacy. It's a physical intimacy. It's a spiritual intimacy that they experience. Total. And this was God's answer. God's answer to the problem of it not being good for man to be alone. It's God's answer for humankind's deepest human need. It's the union of life with another. I mean, this is profound stuff. We haven't even made it two chapters into the Bible, and here it is. So one of the best wedding bloopers that I've ever heard in my entire life, it actually happened to friends of ours, and we'll just call them Jake and Lisa, okay? So their pastor, who must have lived an extremely sheltered life, I'll just apologize for all of us right now, He says at the start of their ceremony, he goes, Jake and Lisa, you know, you come today as two individual eyes. But today, the good news is that your individual eyes will be joined together into one we, one very strong and unified we. And I just want you to take a look around, he says to our friends. Look at all these people gathered here today. We're here to celebrate your weenus. Imagine keeping a straight face through that, all right? He really did say weenus. I have no idea if he knew there were layers to that or what he was thinking in that moment, but it really did happen. So we're going to talk today, the rest of our time, about we-ness or oneness, about us. And is there more happening here in marriage than just cohabitation? I mean, is there more to marriage than just a tax deduction that we get? Is there more than companionship, love, sex, providing home for children? Because marriage isn't a business arrangement between two people. It's not a social contract for just this time in life. It's what the Bible calls a covenant. A covenant. It's a special, mysterious, life-uniting, joy-giving relationship that's ordained by God. And I want to say, don't accept anything less. Don't accept anything less. And I realize that life is complicated, that it's difficult. Sometimes it's tragic and even cruel. But all the more reason to say, be vigilant. You must continuously pursue and protect your oneness. Or in the memorable words of our friend's pastor, you know, protect your we-ness. You have to protect it. So how do we do that? I mentioned at the start, the key to successful long-term marriages are fostering friendship. And I'm just going to go out on a limb here. I'm going to assume that when those of you who are married got married, you actually were friends. There was actually an element of you enjoying spending time with one another. And over time, it grew and it deepened, and you're married now. There is this us. So I want to help you remember what that connection was like. I want it to grow once again. And it's never too late to start believing that God was present on that day you gave your vows. He blessed your union with one another, so you can believe in this us. You were created to be one. So there's things that hurt us. What are they? We all have our lists. The everyday options, you know, there are distractions that are present in our life. Technology is on that list of hurting us. Tiredness might be on that list. Maybe it's boredom or busyness. Those are just kind of the everyday things that all of us experience. You know, there's long-term toxins to us. Kind of perpetual conflict that's non-functional. That can become toxic to relationships. Maybe it's prioritizing others over your spouse, whether that's career or work or family, those family relationships. There's nuclear options that destroy us in a hurry. It can be lies and untruthfulness between you and your relationship. I mean, obviously betrayal, which includes everything on up to and through affairs that happen. Those are the nuclear options that destroy us. But over time, the disconnectedness creates distance. There's a gap that begins to grow between you and your spouse. And in my relationship with Corey, the more that I'm busy, I've discovered, the more preoccupied I become, the more whatever happens. And as I pull away, she starts to do the same. She decides she needs to be more independent. She looks for other ways to meet her relational needs. And as she grows more independent, we both stop kind of investing or being intentional about that connectedness. And the gap gets wider. So what do? You have to mind that gap. You have to be aware of it and know that it exists. And you have to get real on about how wide it is. This is not a one-day adventure. okay? This is going to take time and intentionality, hopefully from both of you. But when you decide to come towards each other, even if it's an inch, just a little itty-bitty step, it makes such a difference. And we're going to get into this in upcoming weeks. It's showing empathy instead of being defensive. It's trying to understand each other's perspective. This all helps focus on the problems instead of just arguing over who's right. So, so important. Just taking a step, a little itty-bitty one. So let's talk about what kind of steps can we take towards connecting with each other. The first step, guys, I'm sorry to say, this one I'm just going to put in your court. So, so, so important for you to develop your skills in recreational conversation. And to better describe this, I want you to watch this short little video. It's from Family Life Canada with Bill Farrell, and he talks about recreational conversation.
The thing I would say every man should know about his wife is that she is intensely interested in you, and she is intensely interested in having a relationship with you. So one of the most important skills as men we need to learn is we need to learn the skill of recreational conversation. That when your wife is talking with you, she's not problem solving necessarily like you are, because the way men approach conversations is there's a problem on the table, we need to figure out the solution to the problem, and when we find the solution, the conversation's over. What your wife is doing is she's connecting with you. She wants to tell you what she did. She wants to tell you what she said. She wants to tell you how she felt while she was doing it. She wants to tell you what her friends had to say about it. She wants to tell you how she would have handled it differently, how her mom would have reacted. The reason why she's telling you all that stuff is she's connecting her life to you. Because when she gets enough of her life connected to you, you become a trustworthy person in her life. And so the time that you spend walking with her and talking, and the time you spend praying with her, and the time that you spend sharing a cup of coffee and interacting with her, and when you ask her the question, how was your day, and you actually listen to the answer, you're not wasting time. You are helping her connect her life to you. And when her life is connected to you, guys, marriage works really, really well. And when she's not connected to you, she's wondering if she can trust you. And again, guys, don't build trust this way. I don't go to my guy friends and say, hey, guys, how's life going? I just want to hear all the details. Because if I do that to my guy friends, they start laughing at me like, we're not going there. But when you do that with your wife, you're helping her to maintain trust in your relationship. And when you have trust, you got everything.
I know videos like this are always fraught with challenges. You know, there's cultural differences between cultures and backgrounds, and then there's the whole men and women thing. So I kind of watched this, and I'm like, I don't know. So I showed it to several different women, including my wife, and they all said the same thing. Like, yeah, that's right. And I was like, dang it. It's really right. So that's a skill, especially for guys, that we need to work on, recreational conversation, because that's not something that we just enter into. We're the fix-it kind of conversations. We're going to talk about that next week. Another thing that helps us connect or reconnect, and this comes from both spouses, battle busyness. Battle the busyness that's in your life. It's worth it. It's learning to stop or avoid serving relational leftovers to your spouse, because we're all used up at the end of the day and we just want to sit there and watch TV and just veg out and that's the leftovers. There's nothing left for that connection. So avoid doing that. And I think that this one's really, really tough, also really, really practical. I'm going to give you two different ways that Les and Leslie Perot approach this. So they're marriage counselors, they're authors too, based here in Seattle. The first one that they suggest is invest in penny moments. You all seen the penny on the ground and you go, is it worth my time to bend over and pick it up? It's just a penny. But you know, over time, if you keep doing that, it actually does start to add up and it actually has some value. So penny moments in our life, we approach it the same way. Is it really worth my time to do this? There's penny moments throughout the day. One might be drive time. you know, the minutes that you're in the car together a lot, and now it's just we're on our phone, right? But we could be connecting. And while that may seem insignificant, it adds up over time. What are some other penny moments that maybe you have in your own life? I mean, because they're all differently. It could be maybe it's breakfast time in the morning. There's two really, really huge ones, and we'll talk about those now. How can you begin to maximize the moments in your day where it might seem like just a little thing, but it adds up? Well, the pros say the two most important minutes of your day together, and this is based on research, are first of all, when you come home. When you come home, greet each other at the end of the day. Research shows that this sets the tone for your rest of your evening together. So, so important. When you come home, how do you approach that moment? Because it is just a moment. The second most important minute of your day together is when you go to bed. And even if you don't go to bed at the same time, this like pillow talk, they actually have research that shows it helps you sleep better. It helps like you have better dreams. It's just so, so important. And I'm guessing that during pillow talk, you're not balancing the budget, right? It's that conversational piece that is so lacking in life together sometimes. So as I shut this down for this morning, I just want to remind you that great marriages don't just happen. It takes energy and effort to connect. Don't give up. You can do this. I can do this. If you're married and you're in that relationship right now, you were actually made, this was made for you. God's on your side. We're on your side. You can do it. Please join me in prayer. Lord, we come before you this morning, and I'm painfully aware of just when you feel like you're stuck. And whether that's from conflict that's in your life or whether that's from something major that's happened that's affecting the trust level between two people, two spouses, Lord. It isn't as easy as 1, 2, 3. So wherever we find ourselves this morning in relationship to our spouse, or we can even apply this to other significant relationships in our life, Lord, we first of all just... we humbly come before you and we say, help us, God. We want to pray for one another and help us to take a step, however small that may be, towards each other. Help us to connect and reestablish just the fun of friendship in our life, Lord. And if that seems like a long way away, then it's just a penny moment and we'll just keep picking up those pennies. We just pray that they would add up, Lord. They would multiply. And we pray this in your name. Amen. Well, let's finish our time together celebrating communion. And I'm going to fast forward through this because we're running just a little bit over time. I want to invite those of you who are serving communion forward. And as they do so, I'm going to read the words of institution. Well, thank you for coming this morning. I'm excited for the journey here the next few weeks. And I really do want to emphasize, man, we are not in any way trying to imply that, you know, like being married makes you more of a person because, you know, Jesus was never married, fully aware of that. But this is this really unique relationship that God has created in our life. And if you experienced a marriage that's been broken or maybe has ended in divorce, I mean, there is no other hurt like that. And so with all the compassion that I can convey or bring to that, like, we want to be on the side of building your marriage up so that that never happens. We want to encourage you and empower you and cheerlead as best as we can because this is such a significant, important relationship. So go in God's blessing, in God's peace, in God's presence this week. We'll see you next week.